Good. Under correspondence, we did have one piece of correspondence that was passed along to the board from Tavener Holland. Did anyone else have anything they would like to bring to our attention? And that brings us to public comment. We do have some folks who would like to speak to us tonight. Mrs. Sheffer will call your names.
I have three names. You will each have 3 minutes to speak. There will be a timer that will appear on the screen, and we will follow the time limit closely. So when your 3 minutes are up, you will need to stop speaking. I have four public speakers' requests. So in the order in which we've received them, I have Betty Winholtz, Cheryl McLean, John Salisbury, and Maridel. Did I say that correctly? Salisbury. So if Ms. Winholtz would like to speak.
And just while she's coming to the mic, I might just say that if these are items that are on the agenda tonight, you might want to wait for the agenda item. The board can speak to those items. If they're not on the agenda, we cannot respond to your comments tonight.
My name is Betty Winholtz. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. I'm a math tutor and have been doing that for about 25 years, and I have tutored students from elementary up through Cuesta College. I feel obliged to bring to your attention an item that has concerned me this last summer. It's about your summer school. And the reason I bring it to your attention is it may be that either through some kind of policy or financial decision, the change that has occurred is something that you created. And I want you to know that what I perceive as a detrimental consequence of that decision. This summer and last summer in the math program, it's been an online program. There is not teacher support for that. And it's a program that does not match our regular school year math. So if you're doing, let's say, geometry, and in the summer program, you may have 7 different items that you have to learn that may more than likely did not relate to anything that you learned first semester in geometry in high school. So, and it's a much more rigorous program. And for me, kids who traditionally have taken summer school have done so to, you know, boost their grade from an F to a D or a D to a C. This program's so rigorous they can't do that. And so they're not able to be successful. And so I know of students, and I've tutored students at both Morro Bay and San Luis, Laguna and Los Osos. But I'm speaking primarily of Morro Bay right now, that are in the last year as well as this year have had to sign up for 2 math classes at the same time because they could not pass the summer school program. So they have to do that makeup during the school year. Now, maybe that's neither here nor there, and that's okay with you. I feel like if you're going to offer summer school, and it's supposed to be to help kids make up what they weren't so they could continue to progress, that program should not be harder than what they were doing in the school year or have a content that is something they did not learn during the school year. And so that's my concern, and I'm hoping that you will look into that and see if you can do something about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd just like to say for people who have recently come in, if you are interested in public comment, to please pick up a sheet over on the table and fill it out and bring it to Mrs. Holmes, then you'll be able to speak.
So, Mrs. Holmes, do we have additional agenda?
Die.
Thank you. Thank you. We'll make sure that there are more agendas. Okay.
We will certainly make sure that everyone who wishes to speak tonight has an opportunity to speak. Next, speaker is Cheryl McLean.
Good evening.
Is this on? Can
yes.
you hear me?
Yes.
Hi. My name's Cheryl McLean, and actually taught in San Luis Coastal for about 27 years, and I reside in San Luis, and I recognize some of you. I'm here because I have recently become aware of the unnecessary removal of several old-growth live oaks, including the largest live oak in town, located along the northern property line of the SLO High School campus. Aside from the rarity and beauty of these trees, not to mention the vital role they play in carbon sequestration, these trees play a critical role in stabilizing the soil and controlling erosion. These oaks are located in a floodplain and are located along a riparian corridor. Stands of trees like these absorb the energy from floodwaters. Floodplain forests store the overflow waters and drive many of the processes to support aquatic life systems and improve water quality. Woody vegetation on floodplains causes significant reductions in flow velocity. As far as I can see, the original 8-classroom building was not located within this floodplain. However, by increasing the new building footprint to now accommodate 12 classrooms, yes, I voted for the measure that funded extra money for this sort of project, by the way. San Luis High will be placing at least 4 of these classrooms in the existing floodplain. The California Code of Regulations, CCR Title 5, requires that new school sites are not to be within an area of flood inundation. As a condition of final site approval, the state may require a hydrologic study or other means of confirmation that the site will not be subject to flooding, or a report of proposed mitigation measures, including estimated costs, or both. A good design would have saved the trees and incorporated them into the design of the annex and avoided the floodplain, protected the wildlife habitat, respected the privacy and needs of your neighbors, and prevented any future liability on your part. And I just want to say, I know you can't unring the bell, you can't bring back the trees, but this is not any way to do business in this city, because you rely on us, we the taxpayers, we the homeowners, for funding and for voting for the measures that fund these projects, and this is really was not a good way to conduct business. When I heard about it, I called starting on Monday. I called about 4 times during the week and asked to speak to Dr. Prater and spoke to someone that told me when I expressed my concern about the trees that they wouldn't be cut down, there would be a meeting with neighbors. And then when I called Friday, they were reporting on the TV news that they weren't going to cut down the trees. And I'm saying, someone told me the trees are being cut down today. Oh, no, well, let me check. Oh, yeah, it's too late. They're already cutting them down. So really, to do something like that behind the neighborhood's back is unconscionable. Thank you very much. I'm very disappointed.
Thank you. John Salisbury.
John Salisbury, 1385 Casadero, right across the fence from the school. I gave you all a little handout here. That's the tree. 9 feet in diameter, 19 feet in circumference. If this was another tree in anywhere else in the state, particularly like Sacramento County, you would have had to pay a $325 per circumference inch. That would be like $74,100. You would have had to also probably put in 228 15-gallon trees or 118 24-inch boxes. The problem was that we had a big petition. We sent it to you, and several of you said, and you got it like 2 or 3 days before because we didn't know when it was going to get chopped down. Unfortunately, one of our neighbors said we're going to have a party, and finally he was told it's going to be coming in after the 5th, after the 4th of July. So some of us sat in the tree, got it stopped the next day. You didn't show up. You put a big fence around it. You sent out a press offering to the newspaper. So next morning, when everybody's reading about the trees being on reprieve, When you're reading it on the radio, hearing the radio, watching on KSBY, reading the trib, it was cut down the next morning. That's the bait and switch. Next page. This is the flyer we got at the end of April, early May, showing it's still in the same place, the annex. You also show the tree still there. That, you knew that a year ago, that this building was going to be put right in our lap. And why didn't you talk to us about it? We're the biggest supporters you've got along Casadero. We put up with the noise at night. We put up with the all-night marathons. We put up with the floats being built in our backyard. And why are we all of a sudden just treated like, you know, whatever? Also, the next page, on the middle of May, you went into the Chamber of Commerce and did the same bait and switch. You showed the buildings, only eight of them still there, in the middle of May. And you knew about that a year ago. The next page shows back in the 40s where the buildings were and the big oaks, a lot of space. The next page shows where you put it on top of us, and there's still a lot of room in front. I hear that you need a fire road. What about the fire road that separated us before? We have 28 feet between buildings now, and we've lost that. She just went over the whole thing about the floodplain. We'll have to see exactly where that line is, because the next page shows roughly where it is, where Casadero is. So how far it goes into school property, we don't know. But take a look at that one down below. Look at all the trees that were wiped out. So anyway, in closing, we also have finally, after 3 months asking for the utility plan, we got one. And thanks for putting the gas line with darn close to the back of our fences. We have trees along that line. Are they going to be chopped up, those roots that keep our trees alive? That's the question we have, and we have gotten no answer. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. And Mayor Del Salisbury?
Need to know my principal players here, and I've never met Eric really. I've met Ryan and Mark and Jim and Ellen, and Catherine is my neighbor. And Watt, I just want you to know that I'm a 1961 graduate of San Luis High, and I respect the process, but I really feel that you did us a disservice, and you all know that. I mean, it's pretty apparent that this was a disservice to us. Right now, we're looking at 15 window spacings, and you can look at this drawing that you have that was never given to us in April, the layout of how it would be against our backsides. And there are 15 window spacings looking down into the five homes that are being affected by this redesign. I need to have some security in knowing that they can't really see through those windows. I've heard that they're going to be high windows. It's just merely for light. I also would like some security in knowing behind that mansard roof that you've designed, and hopefully it will be tile, as you want that continuity in your design. But behind that heavy tile, there is going to be, evidently, according to Steve, he said that there is going to be air conditioning and heating units up on the roof. Now, I don't know if you've walked by some of your heating and air units on the campus, but it's kind of like a wind tunnel. And I can imagine listening to that all night if someone leaves their air conditioning units on or the heating unit on. So we need some guarantees, some warranties. And I think that it's only fair that we look at each other and try to work with each other in a way that's not just ramrodding something through. All of the neighbors that were affected were dumbstruck, and I was dumbstruck. I grew up in the home that now you look down on. If you all stood out there and looked down where that tree was removed, my mother designed that home around that backdrop. She says this is a great way to be a part of a school, but have the privacy from the school. And when I talked to Steve, he said that he wasn't sure what kind of specimens they were going to put in behind the classroom, but it looks like now there's really not going to be any room to put any plantings on your side. So I think that maybe you need to help with all of us and our side. And so you need to think about that. But we need some separation, some privacy, and 15 window spacings looking down into our yard doesn't provide us privacy. You stuck this classroom right 20 paces from our back fence.
Okay, so. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
You know, we're...
on a timeline.
Yeah. Thank you, though.
One thing that we had an appraisal in the wintertime, and we had just had an appraisal after we showed up, showed the appraiser what's going to happen to us. We lost $200,000 in appraised value. Okay. We've also increased.
Thank you, Mr. Salisbury.
We need to go on with our other speakers. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay.
So those are all the speaker requests I have, but I know there's some other people who wish to speak. So if you would approach the podium and state your name and where you're from, and we'll start the 3 minutes. If you filled something out, if you could hand it to Mrs. Holmes, please.
Hi, my name's Mike Hogan. I live at 1325 Casadero Street. My name's Mike Hogan. I live at 1325 Casadero Street. Well down the street from where the trees were taken out, and that was a travesty and very, very unfortunate. But it happened, and I want to talk about moving on now and continuing to be good neighbors. The high school and Casadero Street, we both impact each other. And both of my kids graduated from San Luis High, proud to be Tigers. Go Tigers. And I've had a good relationship, we all have, with the high school over the years. And it just seems like something's changing a little bit. And I think a lot of that has to do with just open communication and transparency throughout this project. And I really think that's what's happened. I'm a retired battalion chief in the city of San Luis Obispo, and I know that guiding bodies don't want to micromanage their people, their good people that are doing their work. But I think at this point it's time for a message to come down from you guys that you really need to work with the neighbors. Stay consistent, keep constant communication, and I know John has really, really worked hard at communicating, and I don't think he's gotten it. That good, open, transparent communication. The oak trees affected quality of life, not me, all those trees, property values, and it was just, like I said, it was a travesty. Like I said, I want to look to the future. We were told that the six-foot fence would remain that is all along that property line, and now I hear some rumblings that that may not happen. And that's going to result in the destruction of more vegetation, old growth vegetation. The oak trees are bad. The rest of that's going to be also bad. I would say leave the six-foot fence alone. Figure out where you guys can use the funds. You know, I understand government budgets. If you don't use it, you're going to lose it. Figure out where to put them and make this something that everybody wants. I don't know if there's any regulations or if you folks really have an agenda that you need an 8-foot fence all around the school, but if you don't, leave the 6-foot fence. It's going to affect all of us now, especially me. My view shed, my backyard, I live right in left field over the fence from the girls' softball field, and I love the red brick dust infields that you guys put down probably 7 years ago, the scoreboard. I love the sounds of kids playing. I love sports. I have a view. I have a sunset view. An 8-foot fence is going to rob all of that. And so that's my little bit of misery, which is nothing what these folks experience. So as we move forward, I'm asking you, please, to involve the neighborhood, consider our needs, and see if we can't find a win-win. That money could be put to better use.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hogan.
Is there anyone else who would like to address the board at this time who has not filled out a slip?
I just wanted to
You know, you need to come to the microphone and state your name and where you're from, please.
Hi, I'm Olivia Richardson. I just wanted to introduce myself. I'm working as a liaison with Heidi Harmon. It's my personal attempt to become more politically active in my community. Heidi's a friend of mine, and she's asked a couple of community members to just attend the school board meetings and take notes and be a presence for her specifically. So anyway, and I'm also a teacher here at SLCUSD. I teach special ed preschool. Many of you look familiar to me, so hello. I know you're surprised to see me here, but this is a good thing. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
That's great. Thank you very much.
Anyone else?
Good afternoon. My name is Samson Blackwell. My son goes to Slo High School. And I just wanted to echo the comments from the former presenter. I think the most important thing, my son was actually pretty devastated to hear that the oak had been cut down, and had worked with some of his friends to go around the school and see if he could advocate for the preservation of the tree. He was most devastated when he heard conflicting statements initially that the tree was going to be saved, and then to find out the very next day that it had been cut down was hurt him personally. So I just wanted to, again, advocate, as previous individuals had done, to involve the local community in the conversations about the changes. And I think an important thing to indicate here, and I think others may have mentioned this too, is the thoughtfulness around environmental preservation and considering the built environment with the natural environment and how to respect the natural environment at the same time that you're having to build to accommodate. And we know this is a larger, of course, issue that we're going to be dealing with in San Luis Obispo in general as we experience growth. And trying to accommodate both of those is going to be of key importance. And it will also be an important lesson for our children about how they can interact in an growing environment with an increasing population. So thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for your work.
Thank you. Anyone else?
My name's Tina Hino, 1375.
Could you speak up a little bit, please? We're having trouble.
Maybe adjust the mic.
There you,
there you go.
Tina Hino, 1375 Casadero. I'm a neighbor of the Salisburys, and I'd just like to say that I realize it's late, but the CEQA evaluation that was done for this project involving the annex, I believe, was wholly inadequate. It specifically addresses that there are no native trees that are going to be removed. It goes specifically into the heritage tree program, and there are no heritage trees being removed. It does not address the grading that we've understood is going to be happening behind our houses, that we understand is going to go down to about 8 feet in places. How there can be no consequence from that is beyond me. So I would really request that a second CEQA be done. I did speak to someone at the California Department of Education Facilities who was the first person to say, oh, they really should have done a second CEQA when they changed the plan. So I would request that you would consider that.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes.
I'm Grace Van Dorn, and I'm a credentialed school nurse here with the district. I just want to say hello and introduce myself. I'm one of four credentialed school nurses that we have, filling three full-time equivalent positions. And I just want to say hello to from our team. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome, Grace.
Thank you for coming.
Is there anyone else who would like to speak during this public comment section? Seeing no one, we will move on to item number 6.01, which is the business and budget update. Mr. Pinkerton.
Yeah, so just a couple things to report tonight for the board. First one's just on enrollment. So we have kind of a spike in our secondary enrollment, in particular Laguna Middle School and San Luis Obispo High School this year. So something that, you know, we knew we were going to have some kind of gradual increases based on the number of students we have, but there was kind of a shocking, you know, 100 extra students at Slo High. So I don't know if it's something where the students aren't going to private schools or coming from Michigan. You know, I'm not. We're looking into that to kind of see where the kids were last year in terms of here. So I'll kind of let you know. But overall, as a district, TK6, we're actually down, in particular in kindergarten, 183 kids. But then we gained 70 in 6 through 8 and then gained another 95 K-12. So it's an interesting kind of dynamic from last into last school year. So overall as a district, down 18 students. We will be going through kind of no-shows. So it's something that in terms of our elementary sites, I think our class sizes are really good. We've kind of gone through that. Doesn't mean that we don't have a couple of abnormalities in terms of class size, but overall low numbers, I would say 24 to 1 K-6, which is fantastic. And then from the secondary standpoint in particular, I've been working with Mr. O'Connor. We've already added some staff to LAMS, but been working with Mr. O'Connor in terms of adding some sections to help out and alleviate some of the crowded classes so that counselors can schedule. So that'll be a constant conversation. We're going to get updates on Friday from all of our sites, and we'll share that with the board on Friday.
Mr. Pinkerton, may I ask you, was there also a spike at Morro Bay High School and Los Osos?
You know what, a little growth, but not as much as we're seeing here in the city. Okay. So it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We actually are fortunate enough to have a STRS audit happening this week in the district. So we were selected to go through that audit process. And so it's a random thing. But we met with the STRS auditor on Monday. Fine, got the information. So she'll be here all week. And then basically we'll meet on Friday as well, Friday morning. And, you know, audit basically is just a time to go through, you know, if there is something we need to work on, correct? You know, we'll do that. But overall, everything seems good, and pulling all the records together, it all seemed like we're in a good place.
Catherine.
I think we'll answer questions.
Mr. Miller.
Ryan, do we have an assessment or a sense of split grade classrooms at this
point? I want to say that we have 5 classes right now, so relatively low number.
K-6.
Okay. K-6.
Thank you.
Yeah, so very, which is, I want to say, about the same as last year. Yeah, about what we had. So we, you know, last year we really focused on the district office in terms of budget cuts and kind of purposefully this summer didn't go towards classrooms at this time and kind of kept that elementary. I mean, that's K-6 elementary in lower numbers. And so it really becomes a principal decision a lot of times in terms of dividing up classes and do they want to make 2 really small 6th grades to have 2 big 5th grade classes. So some of those things. But overall, very few combos across the district, which we know is a positive. And then the last thing is, you know, I sat through a CPR class for 4 hours on Friday. So it's one of the things that we do is, you know, we have to be CPR certified, or we don't have to, but it's a good thing for us to do and see what our employees have to go through. And so one of the things that came up during those during the CPR meeting is AEDs. And so it's probably time for us to consider now that we've kind of piloted them at our high schools and our middle schools in particular, because we know there's big events at those sites. It's probably time to look at our elementary schools and the rest of our sites as well. So I'll be coming back to the board with kind of a recommendation in terms of, you know, putting those in at all of our sites.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, Mr. Quisenberry.
Mr. Pinkerton, as far as the AEDs go, most of them have very detailed instructions that, you know, mm-hmm. we'll stop. But have you given any thought to all 2 things? One is some additional instruction for folks, and 2, making sure that not only the school site personnel, but people who might use the site mm-hmm. Would know exactly where those are.
So, yes, yeah, so you're absolutely correct in that the AED literally, you open it up and it walks you step by step, explains everything that you're supposed to do. What we found with our first round of AEDs actually is that if you put them in public places and people aren't watching them, they get stolen. So we've had 3 stolen of the initial ones that we had. One was right inside that room next to the boardroom. So unfortunately, what that's meant is that we have them in the office you know, all of our offices at Laguna, Lambs, San Luis High, Morro Bay High. And then we've put them at the high schools in the training rooms. And then we have them inside the PE rooms at the two middle schools. So it's one of those things where it's, you know, it's unfortunate that we have to do that. But, you know, we can't, you know, they're a couple thousand dollars a piece. So those walking off is not a positive thing. So that said, I know that Sally has put AED signs up. Okay. Like throughout adult ed, you know, AED located in the adult education office room. So that's where, you know, the one here at the district office is right at the. So it is very important that we, you know, if we're going to have them, that people know where they're located, of course. I'm even looking into kind of the signs that you can put up outside the building, that kind of AED located here type of thing. And then also, in fact, we were just going over today with Kristen Newland, our personnel director, annual notifications. And actually, it's one of the new notifications that we have to do by law is to let people know about our AED locations as well as instructions on how to use those. So it's a new one that we're going to be adding an admin reg to. Okay.
Okay. And we're moving on to item number 6.02, Education Services Update with Mrs. McGrath.
Good evening. First of all, I would like to introduce a special person to you. I invited Jeremy Kolisch to be here tonight, our new Information Service and Technology Director. So this is Jeremy here. Right there.
I bet you're glad to see him on board.
So happy to see him. He actually joked with me, you sure were happy when you offered me that position. So I surely was. Jeremy, you will see this lovely picture here of Jeremy because he was a Los Ranchos and Laguna and Slo High graduate. So
color photography.
Homegrown.
Love that. Love that. The arrow indicating Jeremy's elementary picture there. So I'm very happy to have him and just wanted you to introduce him and just tell you that Jeremy has some experience from Cuesta and Arizona State and for the last 13 years has been operating Techtegrity. So he comes with a very innovative and exciting addition to our school district. So we're really excited to have him and has that great balance of innovative thinking and being creative, also working well with people. So it was a great combination. Glad to have him. Thanks, Jeremy.
That's fabulous.
Second thing, we did have some really great professional development for teachers this summer. Amy had hundreds of teachers here, and we'll give you an update a little more specifically about Techie Teacher Boot Camp, as well as some summer PD offerings that an amazing amount of teachers participated in and really had some new ideas and good energy around. So if we will update you on that. We did conduct a new employee orientation. So Ms. Newland did a great job welcoming our new employees and getting them oriented to not only the district office, but their school sites as well, and help them to get a fresh, you know, clean, informed start. So that was a good addition for us. Also, obviously, school started on Monday. All of us in cabinet made our rounds to the different school sites, and we were really impressed by the level of organization. You know, lots of fresh paint and, you know, looked great at a lot of school sites, and principals and staff organized and kids excited to be there. So really great start to school. It was good to see. Thank you.
We started school off with a bang with the eclipse as well, right? Yes, exciting. So moving on now to item number 6.03, and that's our Measure D update. Back to Mr. Pinkerton.
So the eclipse wasn't too great if you were on the coast
as
a kid. You know, it was a little rough. A lot of disappointed glass kids wearing glasses, but fortunately the Nassau side had a pretty good picture of it as we run around, which was nice. So I started off at Morro Bay High School on first day of school. They kind of have a new system for, you know, people coming in and out of the campus because of the, you know, future construction student services building there and with the pool construction going on and all those types of things. So kind of hit that with Anthony and some of his team to help with parking the first day. So got that established. So they have pretty much gutted the old gym at Morro Bay High School. And so that's the gym is getting new fresh paint job outside, new roof, of course, and new floor, which was which basically was destroyed during one of the floods from the roof. That's been fixed. So that looks good. It's progressing, which is great. We've also started here at San Luis Obispo High School. They actually moved Jan Fecho in to the robotics room. which looks really good. A few finishing touches to finish up, but overall, furniture, Jan's in, and it really, it's going to be really nice for that robotics program. And in light of what she had to go through last year and the fire and those types of things, it'll be a really positive thing, I think, for Jan and her students that we were able to get that accomplished this summer. We also did a few improvements at the Culinary Arts Room next to kind of the Tiny Tigers there in that area. So we have a new culinary arts teacher there. So kind of a nice way to hopefully get that program kicked off and started. So, a big positive there. And
Ryan,
then we also, yes.
Is that a temporary arrangement until construction is completed?
Yes. Okay. Good. So we also had some painting projects get accomplished. So if you've had a chance to go by Del Mar in elementary in particular, looks really fresh, clean, some new concrete. I mean, just really looks nice. We did some work at Sinsheimer Elementary School here in terms of paint job, cleaning up some of the landscaping in front. Again, huge difference, I think, for that site to start off. And then the other project was at Sunnyside Elementary School, so a new paint job there. So some of those are kind of kicked off. We have held off a little bit on the C.L. Smith project, in particular, the bidding season. So in talking with our contractor, Mr. Mano, and Rick Stimson, they felt it was, they're pulling it together now, but with all the contractors rush, very busy in the summer, we were a little worried in terms of the bidding environment at that time. So kind of waiting, but we hope to bring that to the board and have a price in the next process here in September so that we can get that project going and established. Annex, same thing, as well as the J Wing.
The old gym at the Slow High School got a nice fresh coat of paint. Makes it look pretty.
I think it looks really, really good. So
really
in terms
good.
Of the start. So, you know, once they get the new windows in, those types of things, it's, and now if you went inside, it's they've gutted it out. So it'll, but again, that's, fortunately for us, that was a building that we were able to modernize and you know, I think it's gonna be a huge addition. I've been talking to Leslie in terms of use of that building, and so it'll, any and all space at Slo High is going to be very important over the next few years.
So I was by C.L. Smith.
Mr. Buckman.
I'm sorry. I'm looking at Ryan. So I went by C.L. Smith. That also looks like it got its paint.
So that was last summer.
Right. Got it.
Smith was last summer, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting call.
Yeah. And then we have Pacheco Elementary School, new playground. And so we're going to have a ribbon cutting for them on Friday, September 1, and I believe Kim was going to send out an invitation to the board and invite you to that. Thank you.
Thank you. And now we have a resolution. It's number 01-17-18, and this has to do with Measure D and appointments to the Citizens Bond Oversight Committee. And I believe that's you again, Mr. Pinkerton.
So basically, our CBOC, our Citizens Bond Oversight Committee, their function and role is to ensure that the Measure D dollars are spent as the ballot described. And so that group has been fantastic, great the last couple of years. So the following members are basically up for their next term of office, and so we're bringing those names forward. They've all said that they would like to continue to serve. They can serve up to 3 terms. On the CBOC, and so that is the basically our recommendation tonight would be for the board to approve the continuation of the following CBOC members.
I wonder if anyone's in our audience who's on this list. You don't see anyone. Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Beckman.
Just a quick question. I'm going to move the motion, but are they on a rotating basis? So 2 years, 1 year, 3 years?
So yeah, so Roya Silver and Mr. San Felipe are kind of separated. They're on a different term cycle so that way they don't all term out at the same time potentially.
Right.
So that's kind of how it was established.
Okay. So I'd like to move adoption of resolution 011718 and have these folks continue to do the great job that they're doing.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mr. Quisenberry. This is a roll call vote, I believe.
Mr. Buckman?
Yes.
Mr. Quisenberry?
Yes.
Mrs. Sheffer?
Yes.
Dr. Eisendrath Rogers?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Yes.
Passes 5-0 with 2 absences.
Thank you. And we thank them for their service. This is a tremendous gift to the community. And we now move on to item number 8.01, summer programs. Mrs. McGrath.
And Mrs. Shields.
Oh, sorry, and Mrs. Shields right in front of me. I'm so sorry.
We're going to tag team it tonight. So if you would cue that up for me, Mrs. Holmes. I want to start by saying to you that what happens during the summer matters. We're going to begin our presentation tonight with a quick video narrated by news commentator Brian Williams on the impact of poverty and learning.
Let's look at two children, one from a middle-income family, the other from one of the millions of low-income American families. As the two kids head off to kindergarten, look what happens. The middle-income child starts out with a six-month lead. The low-income child is already falling behind because of a lack of access to early reading and preschool education. During their year in kindergarten, in the same school and classroom, the two children will learn at about the same rate, so we'll move them both forward 9 months. But look what happens in that first summer between kindergarten and first grade. Our middle-income child moves ahead about a month in reading because learning of one kind or another continues over the summer. The low-income child falls back about 2 months. So when school begins again, when they go back for first grade, the gap between them has already widened. During first grade, again, they move ahead at about the same rate, another 9 months. That next summer, the activities and lifestyle of the middle-income family keep that child moving forward. But the low-income child has fewer opportunities to reinforce good habits like reading, and that child falls farther behind. Then we come to second grade, and again, our two children learn at the same rate. But the summer after second grade sets our low-income child back again, and our middle-income child moves forward again, and the gap widens again. By just the third grade, the two children are already far apart. By the end of fifth grade, the gap between the children is 2.5 to 3 years. It will keep growing through middle school. So you see, without addressing what's happening during the summer, it is impossible to ever catch up. It's impossible to close the gap. No matter how much high-quality learning goes on from September to June, every year the gap widens. Let's look at two children, one from a middle-income family, the other from one of the millions of low-income American families.
So thanks to your commitment and LCAP funding through Focus 2, we were able to provide targeted summer school programs this year both at elementary and secondary schools. Mrs. McGrath and I will be sharing some of the highlights for you tonight. And we'll begin with elementary. We hosted summer programs at 4 of our elementary sites with students from all 10 of our elementary schools with a lot of help from our transportation department. 442 students attended our summer programs. Of those students, 265, or 60%, are learning English as a second language. 26 students have learned English as their second language and have now been designated as English fluent. And 322, or 72%, of the students attending summer school for elementary came from economically disadvantaged households. In addition to that, I checked in with Food Services Director Aaron Primer today and found out that we served 1,420 summer meals at 7 sites. And in addition, with the support of the food bank, we served an additional 3,654 meals at Baywood, Hawthorne, and Morro Bay Library this summer. So as you saw earlier, research has proven time and time again that summer reading slide is real, and students need to be immersed in learning activities to avoid the consequences of an unengaged summer brain. Specific studies actually demonstrate summer reading programs can significantly improve students' reading achievement if they're given access, choice, and support. With that in mind, our focus for summer 2017 was to provide fun and engaging learning environments where students would beat the odds of the summer reading loss. Our students were provided with an abundance of daily experiences to grow us readers. They read to themselves. They read with their teacher. They read in reading workshop. They read with their buddies. They read in comfy chairs and in special reading areas. They read for an audience. They read on Chromebooks. And of course, they wrote about what they read in their writer's workshop. By the end of our program, our students had read a lot of books. Some of those books were read independently, some were read online, and some were read with their teacher. Here you see students posting their individual reading totals with a grand total for all four schools of 17,278 books, up, I might add, by 5,002 books from the year before. Of course, we had a few more students as well in just 20 days. In addition to reading and writing, students participated in lots of math and science. Students were engaged in our Bridges Math Program activities as well as online interventions. Individual school sites and classroom teachers added their own touches to make summer learning engaging. For example, Pacheco students were able to expand their learning with the addition of a one-week science camp at Cal Poly. At Baywood, hands-on science was a daily part of their learning. Here you see students learning about the sun, solar power, and making a shadow clock. A highlight for students at Bishop's Peak was class buddies. Big and little buddies met weekly and worked on collaborative hands-on learning activities to develop problem-solving and critical thinking skills in mathematics and science. Hawthorne summer school classes enjoyed weekly walking field trips to the local public library to enhance student learning. They attended the library's free summer family program that included, as you can see here, a hands-on zoo-to-you presentation about reptiles, amphibians, and invertebrates. A special feature again this summer was the Children's Farmers Market. The food bank provided fresh-grown fruits and vegetables in a farmers market-like display. Fifth and sixth grade students worked as vendors and sold produce to the younger students to take home to their families while practicing math skills and learning about supply and demand. It was a beautiful learning experience for all.
Middle schools also had an engaging summer experience. So we held three two-week sessions. There were between 40 to 60 students per session for each school. We focused on upcoming 6th, 7th, and 8th graders for that and had a very engaging and connected staff. These were dedicated people that were really interested in helping these students have not just a basic skills, boring, typical summer experience, but we're really committed to having a hands-on learning, kind of thematic, engaging approach. So you will see these themes that they followed, where they incorporated basic skills of their reading, their writing, and math that they were going to walk into for the standards for the following year in these ways. So you'll see some of the pictures here from the aquatics program that took place. From culinary arts, adding in mathematics, and then entrepreneurship, you'll see is a really neat presentation to the hot house there that you'll find in San Luis Obispo. Oops. Also, there was a theater arts program, and you'll see some student comments coming up here in a little while that it seemed to really engage and maybe hook some students into extracurricular activities around theater. Teachers notice that not only is it probably going to impact their summer experience, but hopefully carry on to some engaging things throughout the year, as well as the students reporting a great experience. For high school summer school, we have a combination. It did take place at three schools. Due to construction, we moved Morro Bays to Loams and Slow Highs to Lambs, and also had Pack Beach participating. So although they were Morro Bay, Slow High, Pack Beach classes, we did put them at the middle schools physically so that we could avoid construction
there as well. We did present it in three different formats. So there were traditional classes as well as virtual online formats and project-based classes. So students were looking at A to G courses. So you could do credit recovery if you failed a class and were looking to receive credit in that class, grade recovery if you're just looking to improve your grade, or to get original credit. So there were some students, I know the pattern you've seen in the past is especially students at Morro Bay that want to open up their schedule throughout the year tend to look for a few classes to get ahead of so that they can have more flexibility throughout the school year. So you'll see our outcome here is we had almost 3,000 credits completed, about 594 courses across subject areas. Some credits still in progress. That tends to be our ag classes primarily that need to finish up projects and things from their summer fair work. So you'll see here from the comprehensive high schools that we had two different formats. So traditionally, you think of the regular kind of brick-and-mortar class, right? So students who do best kind of in an environment directly with a teacher in a cohort setting, a group of students moving through. The virtual option we opened up for students that were looking for an alternative kind of to a classroom setting, maybe needed a little flexibility. Maybe they had a, you know, gymnastics camp for a week right in the middle of that and needed a little bit of flexibility in order to complete things. So for some students, this ended up being a great alternative option for them. You can see in our virtual format, we had our A to G approved courses, not cohort driven, so there's a lot more flexibility. It was much more individualized around individual pacing where teachers kept up and kept kids on track of where they needed to be, but it's not like the whole group of students were moving together at the same time. We did have these courses reviewed by our SLCUSD teachers to make sure that they did align to standards and to the level of rigor and expectation. And any course that we offered kind of did have that seal of approval from one of our teachers before we offered it. So you'll see the numbers here. So we had about 232 traditional courses completed, about 351. The virtual format did become a little bit more popular this year. The 68 in progress are ag classes. And you can see the, excuse me, the combination of courses offered. Pacific Beach, they had 11 project-based courses completed. They really did a kind of an integrated model as well where they had hands-on agriculture with literacy, combining reading, writing into that format. It's a very engaging format for them as well. I believe that includes our summer school wrap-up from elementary, middle, and high school. If you have any questions for myself or Ms. Shields, we'll be happy to answer them.
Mr. Quisenberry?
I just want to know if you did mention here that the courses that were reviewed by the teachers in the district for rigor and expectations, had you heard anything prior to this meeting from anybody about it sounds like specifically it was geometry, but it being too rigorous and not completely aligned with the coursework?
The courses do come with a standards alignment from the, you know, what's given to us. They do already have A to G approval and our standards aligned. We went ahead and took the additional step of having our teachers review those. And the overall consensus is they are rigorous, right? We used to have a, you know, kind of an online offering where students could complete a course in almost 2 to 3 weeks. Teachers felt like it was not anywhere near equivalent to a year-long course that they would be offered during the school year. And yes, they would say it is rigorous and it is, you're receiving A to G approval, right? This is a rigorous course, right? That matches standards and it does have standards alignment. So that is the general consensus, yes.
Were they, do you know if they were designed to sort of loop back if you needed remediation and, you know, and you could pace yourself? Go back, review,
exactly.
Retake.
Yeah, the interesting format is we offer two different courses for summer school. So if a student is doing credit recovery or grade recovery, what we do is we allow a student to first do a pretest and to look at what skills do you already understand, because if you've already done a whole year of that course and completed that, do we really necessarily need you to walk through every single step of it? So what we do is they offer a pre-assessment that allows you to kind of test out of the things that you understand. understand, right? And as we all know, in high school, students get grades lower than maybe their level of understanding for a variety of reasons, right? So if a student truly had understanding, then it allows them to only complete the remaining standards that they did not understand. If it's a new course that they've never been in before, then it does walk them through the entire course. And there are opportunities there to have reteaching, to get support. There's also other online opportunities that we offer. In math, I will tell you, we did have a difficult time finding our teachers that were interested in teaching a math summer school course. But we did have teachers available, including math credential teachers, that were also there for additional help. That is the primary model that the online format suggests, is that they say every content, all the content is there available within the online course, but the best and strongest model is to also have a credentialed teacher in that area. So that's the format we're working to stick with for now.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Buckman?
Thanks. Just congratulations to both of you. That look like comprehensive and good, and it looks like we got a lot of learning done. That's on the plus, and I'm really excited about all the meals that were served. After watching the video at the beginning and seeing the results of this, I just really want to urge that we never cut summer school again. And I can't remember how many years ago it was. I think it may be before this administration that we cut summer school out of the program. I just totally get it and totally said it and just don't want to see it happen again. So thank you for this presentation.
You're welcome.
Mrs. Sheffer. I have a couple of questions. I'll start with Kimberly, since you're already up there. Again, harking back to the math in particular, were these courses at all advertised as remediation, or were some remediation and some were explained to be covering material that the student perhaps had not been exposed to before?
So there were three different options. So a student could choose to take the course for original credit. So, for example, I finished Algebra 1 last year in ninth grade. I want to take geometry in summer school this year so that I can walk into Algebra 2 as a sophomore. So for original credit is an option. For grade recovery, so I received a D, and that I want to walk into a four-year university, so I'm going to try to go retake that class to make my grade a C or higher. Or for credit recovery. So I received an F in the course, and I'm interested in having credit so that I can move on to my next math course. So there was three different options. So depending on whether they were recovering their grade in the credit or whether it was original credit, depends on if they received the whole program or the pre-assessment.
Were there opportunities for them to select whether they wanted to take it by a distance, a virtual class, or an in-class course? Did the students have that option?
Yeah, whenever possible, we could. So if we had enough people available that we could offer both options, we did when we could. Once in a while, it was that we only had 16 people that signed up for it, so we wouldn't likely offer two different formats. So anytime we could, we gave students the option, and we did communicate beforehand that this would be the format.
Okay. And with the classes that were where they had the support of a credentialed teacher from our district, was that teacher readily available, or was it difficult getting the student and the teacher matched up? Have you heard anything? Have you received any feedback about whether that worked effectively?
The majority of the feedback was that they could access the teacher when needed. They didn't always have the teacher standing in the room just, sure, you know, waiting for them, but could access the person on campus when needed.
So were those virtual classes taught on the campus, or was the student accessing them from home?
What we did, and this was just our, our best, try at this, was we said, come to us at first and follow a regular traditional format, and then kind of prove that you can handle the responsibility and the added, kind of independence that's required from completing that type of course on your own and in a more flexible format. So we didn't want to put students in a situation where then they're going to walk away and then not be completing assignments and be flailing and needing help. So we said, come for a while, kind of prove that you can handle this format. And then when the teacher sees that you can handle that more flexibility and more independence, then we'll allow you to not physically come each day. You do have to always come to take quizzes and tests and that kind of thing in person, but we did allow more flexibility when they could prove that they could handle that level of independence.
Okay, and do we have any sense of how many students dropped the courses, or did most students who enrolled complete that? And this is for all the summer school seven.
Yes, I don't have the exact number, but I would say most definitely. I mean, I could easily say that most. I don't have an exact number of how many or who didn't complete.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And then my question for Mrs. Shields has to do with meals served. You indicated that meals were served at some of the schools as well as the Morro Bay Library. And were those meals available to our students whether or not they were enrolled in summer school, or were they just for summer school
kiddos? That is correct, as well as members of the community.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So certainly something we should be proud of. Thank you for putting that together.
Mrs. Shields, please don't go away. That was a fabulously graphic depiction of how students walk backwards while some students are walking forwards during those summers. It was really beautifully characterized in that way. I'm trying to understand the numbers. So I think you said 442 out of what, that was EL students, out of what population? How many did not take advantage?
I don't have that number. Our summer school program is an invite program, mm-hmm. so mm-hmm. students are invited who could benefit from the program. I would have to get that for you.
Yeah, I was just wondering how we, even if without the number, how would we capture the rest of those students? Yeah. What would make it enticing?
I think we do a lot to make it enticing. I think transportation certainly helps. Lunch certainly helps. Engaging curriculum certainly helps. For some children, if they're not being nudged mm-hmm. to attend mm-hmm. and they're able to convince someone at home that they don't need to go, then that's something we can't completely get around. But I think we do our best to sell it. In fact, we begin our recruitment of summer school in March at our parent-teacher conferences, where the teacher sits down with the parent and says, I'd like to invite your child right now to one of our summer school spots, mm-hmm. and tells them why, helps them, you know, understand why it would be really important for their child. So we do everything we can to get them there. And then we do a follow-up closer to the end of the school year, where individual phone calls are made, you know, one more time to see if we can get as many kids enrolled. I will say with that, I'm gonna say we have about 50 more students this year than we did last year, but ultimately it's still a family's choice whether their children attend or not, but we do everything we can to get them there.
Wow. It was a great presentation. Thank you.
Catherine, can I ask one more?
I'm sorry, Mr. Buckman. Yes,
thanks. I'm sorry, I forgot to ask this. So one of the things that I found intriguing was the emphasis on literacy and reading, which we know is you can't do that, you can't do much else. But I was interested in the use of the bottom line question is the ratio of electronic online books with paper books. I found it intriguing that there was a lot of paper books being used. Is that mirror what's going on during the regular school year? Are we leaning more heavily towards paper or tech?
I think we are still leaning more heavily towards paper. Our online reading access that we have is the MyOn program, and I will be sharing an update for you from last year's usage in the coming weeks in a Friday Focus. If our district librarian was here, Mrs. Haupt would say there's nothing like a good book in a child's hands, and we're never going to replace that and what a child can get from that. With that said, online reading is a great alternative for many kids, but not for all kids.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Prater, we are now up to item number 8.02, and this is about adopting the board priorities.
Yes, good evening, board. I'm speaking to you about something that you actually know this very intimately, but I would like tonight to have you adopt the very priorities that you identified over the summer as what you think are most important to focus in on. So what you'll see is three broad areas with specifics underneath it. Specifically, the first and probably the most important has to do with our LCAP focus areas, those five areas that align with the eight state priorities. They align with our public engagement around what our constituents feel is most important for our students to learn and grow. So you'll see that focus area one is about student achievement. After all, that's why we're here. That's where our energy and our resources should flow. And so you'll see that the board has established this idea of an overall student achievement expectation, and we're well on our way. Since we've begun monitoring student progress, now that the SBAC is in place, our district has shown growth across all subgroups and exceeds achievement levels across the county. So we're doing well, but I know we can do better, and that's why you identified that as a priority. The career technical education pathway completion, the state is now measuring not just college readiness, but college and career readiness. So this focus is important. Students of the future, graduates of the future, are going to need to have capacity in technical skills as well as academic skills. And then, of course, we used our collective bargaining agreement wisely several years ago and adopted an instructional model. We refer to it as the Charlotte Danielson model for instruction, and it is robust, it is rich, and it is something that we all aspire to. This is great teaching. They show you, here's how you do it, this is what it looks like, and we all are seeking that level of performance in the classroom because we know great teaching makes all the difference. And so that's where that focus belongs. We are going to close that achievement gap. So that earlier video you saw on summer school and the reason for it, so they used your middle-class child versus a child that's economically challenged. We know in San Luis Coastal that gap is significant. We believe we can accelerate the learning within that particular group of students by honing in and focusing on them. And that's not to say that the performance of the group that's achieving at higher levels aren't going to be our focus either. They will. But we're going to accelerate the achievement levels of our lower socioeconomically disadvantaged subgroups in English, math, as well as A through G requirements, and soon to be science as well. Culture of care is part and parcel the requirement of this. Kids cannot thrive. Kids cannot learn if they don't feel safe, if they don't feel connected, if they don't feel valued. And so our big focus here is on social and emotional wellness, as well as building our capacity around cultural awareness and competencies. So we are working really hard to develop those with our staff, with our people, with ourselves. And so we believe that's an enormously important priority. Focus area four is tech and innovation. A big priority of the board is to marry the technology with a reasonable balance between paper, writing, and technology in the classroom. It's becoming more and more clear that you need both to be successful in this society, which then ties to the part B of that, which is access to tools and to the internet. Last year, the board saw that we did a Bright Bites survey, identified what appeared to be a pretty high percentage of our students and their families having access to the internet. But we dug a little deeper, and we question whether that means dad's cell phone, but I don't have a tool to do my homework on, but the teacher's expecting me to do that work. And we see that as an unfair playing field, and we're looking to address access issues, especially among our student populations that do not have it. So we want to balance that out, so that's going to be a priority. And then area five is data culture. And for this, we know, we heard questions tonight. How many students didn't just attend summer school, but how many students didn't attend summer school? Very insightful question. We need to have that information. We need to be aware of that. How we get our students in larger groups to come to our summer program and to our learning is a critical part of, I think, our ability to get our kids involved and our parents engaged, too. So progress monitoring is a big one. A lot of people think, oh, you're just assessing kids to death. Well, not really. What this is about is knowing whether what I taught the kids learned. That's an incredibly important piece. So we're going to become more sophisticated in how we measure those things. The second part is transitioning the district through a very difficult challenge, which is the closure, the announced closure of the Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. This is a tricky one because in time, we're going to lose a significant amount of resources that we currently, over the last three decades, have enjoyed as a result of that tax revenue from the plant. So we identified a Blue Ribbon Committee who is made up of community business leaders, people that aren't connected to our district but are part of our community, to give us some ideas as to what we can do to best transition this process. I will then take that information and carry that forward out into the community and to our staff and to our leadership groups, and I will ask the basic questions. What do you guys think about this? If not this, then what? But these are the things we need to do intelligently and carefully. Programmatic alignment has to do with what do we want our district to look like in the coming decade? These are big questions to ask, irrespective of the closure of the plant. We need to ask those bold types of questions. What will our kids need and require? And we might surprise ourselves as to what the future holds. It may look a little different. And so this might turn into an opportunity. And then finally, D, which is establish an education foundation. As part of the negotiations with PG&E last year, assuming the Public Utilities Commission approves the agreement, San Luis Coastal will receive $10 million towards an education foundation. That foundation will become the seed money for additional resources that will allow us to maintain and or create or develop new programs that allow kids to thrive that we wouldn't otherwise be able to afford. I can tell you, summer programs will be a likely contender for those monies. I can tell you that. And then part three has to do with Measure D. This is a really tricky thing when you take $177 million of taxpayer dollars and try to renovate your facilities that have been neglected or really just haven't had the ability to modernize over the past few decades. And so the board has established this a very important notion that health, safety, and conservation measures are super important as we move forward. And I think that's wise. As you heard tonight, it's not always easy. And we have a great desire to do right by our community and to do the right things for our kids. And these things, as we start working with our architectural designs, as we start working with our budget, and developing these forward-thinking ideas, it's both exciting and challenging all at the same time. So we are trying to do our best. I'm asking you tonight to adopt these priorities, and so that staff can move forward with a plan to achieve these important priorities.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this item? Seeing no one, I'll go to the board. Anyone on the board? Mark?
Just one quick question. So on Focus Area 3, when we're talking about the culture of care, and I know you probably have specifics behind this, but I just want to really be tuned into this. Does this include the staff development, district-wide attention to creating a sense of connectedness and working with both minority students and LGBTQ students?
Yeah, of course. It's the beginning of us trying to refine our practices, acknowledge that there's still much work to do in the area of understanding quite frankly, that kids come in all shapes, sizes, and differences. And we want to honor that. We need to develop our capacity to understand how to best find a way to get them connected into our school community so they don't feel marginalized or isolated or alone. These are important things to us. So, yeah, so we're creating not just those staff development opportunities, but we're also identifying what we're calling a Common Ground Advisory Task Force, which will be made up of a very diverse group of community members and staff who will weigh in on those very things and provide some specific suggestions and actions on how we can improve the way kids feel, regardless of their circumstance, when they come to our schools and walk in our hallways.
So with that, if I can make a motion to approve these board priorities? Oh, I'm sorry.
Let me just ask Mrs. Sheffer if she had a comment first.
I was going
first.
To make a motion.
Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Ruckman, then.
If I can make that motion.
Sure.
Thank you.
Did you make the motion, Mr. Okay.
What was your motion?
Could you make the motion again, please?
To adopt the board priorities as presented.
I'll second.
Okay, so we have a motion by Mr. Buckman and a second by Mrs. Sheffer to adopt our agenda discussion board priorities. Thank you, the board priorities. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Priorities. Thank you. Thank you. And now we're moving on to item number 8.03, which is to approve our LCAP outreach plan. And Mrs. McGrath.
Thank you. This evening I bring forward a outreach plan that really looks at ways to gather input from a variety of stakeholders. Our goal is to have meaningful engagement from parents, from students, from other stakeholders. We do look at what's required, so consultation is required from school districts for consulting teachers and principals, administrators, and other school personnel, parents, and pupils in developing our LCAP, and we're looking for ways to make meaningful impact, feedback, and conversations around that. One of the reminders is that LCAP accounts for, you know, just over $4 million, approximately 5-ish percent of our total budget. So we are looking for what are the additional actions that can take place in order to address the needs of our socioeconomically disadvantaged students, of our foster homeless youth, and English language learners. So tonight, the outreach plan has a variety of methods that we're looking to gather this input. You can see the Superintendent Student Senate, where we pull information from our middle school and high school students and really have valuable conversations and hear from them, as well as the Common Ground Task Force that Dr. Prater just mentioned, staff outreach presentations, as Mr. Pinkerton and I go around school to school, give a presentation and gather input, as well as a staff survey that's put out after that, parent and community survey as well. There'll be 3 to 5 board meetings and presentations where the community can have the opportunity to give feedback. The Parent Teacher Association PTA leader meetings where we present the LCAP and information and gather input. Amy does a great job with DLAC and DTAC gathering input from those two councils. We are looking this year to also add an LCAP Advisory Council. What we're looking at is creating a group that meets a few times a year that pulls from all different stakeholders and really gathers around to have even more conversation around what we're doing for additional actions to reach those LCAP groups. So we sat down together and kind of calendared these events out. Looks like starting in September, something is happening every single month in order for us to gather input in different ways. So tonight, I believe it's action that we're asking that you adopt our outreach plan. And I would be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. And is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one, Mrs. Sheffer? Or Mr. Quisenberry?
Unless Mrs. Sheffer has some questions, I move approval of the LCAP outreach plan.
I do have a question. I would like to either just have it with Friday notes or so I have a calendar of the LCAP events. And I guess the only comment I would make is that we do so much time doing LCAP outreach that I
am concerned sometimes about the ability of everyone who's doing all the outreach to have the time to put things in place that we need to do. So it is a big, a lot of work and a lot of time that is put into this, and I really appreciate it, and I appreciate the big balancing act that it entails. So thank you, and you're adding more to your plate, but I know this is all worth it, but I just feel, as one person, the need to be cognizant of what's already on your plates that involves the direct contact with our kids and our various constituencies. But thank you.
Mr. Buckman?
Yeah, I just want to make mention that since this new law came down, since LCAP came into existence, this district has gone so far beyond what the requirement is. If I remember correctly, there's just four groups that we are mandated to contact. And I'm looking at this. There must be, 10, 15 here. So I just want that to just compliment you guys, because, again, I know this is a ton of work. I'm just echoing what Ellen said. But we are just doing so much more than is required.
Mr. Quisenberry, are you ready to make your motion then?
I move approval of the LCAP outreach plan.
And I'll second. We have a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by the chair. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And that passes 5-0. And we're now moving on to item number 8.04, which is to appoint a board subcommittee for board policy review.
So thank you for hearing me out on this. From my perspective, with the number of laws the governor has recently signed into law recently, I'm beginning to see more and more policies that will require revision, and it's a very important piece that in order for us to maintain a relevant policy position as a district, that we make some modifications to or revisions to some of our policies. So they're starting to stack up, and I'm looking at our board meetings and all the work we have in front of us, and I'm trying to come up with a system that I believe will be more efficient, more respectful of the time that we spend in our evening meetings. And this idea of a subcommittee is something that I've been playing with, and I wanted to ask you to consider it tonight. And so I'm envisioning two members of the board to sit on this board subcommittee with a third alternate. The idea is this committee would regularly meet with Mrs. McGrath. I'm talking regularly, once a month, and review these policies that we view as critical, that come from GAMET, from CSBA, as saying these are the things that have time consequence and require revision, and then allow the subcommittee to look at them and put a once-over on them. Once that's done, then we will provide those board policy revisions that have been vetted by the subcommittee to the whole board prior to a board meeting, which then hopefully will provide a little more sort of leadway, kind of like a push start, if you will, so that we can move through those policy revisions more quickly, more efficiently. But yet you know that they've had the thorough review that they deserve. So that's the concept. I'm thinking of a once-a-month meeting and working closely with Mrs. McGrath on those revisions, allowing the board a little more confidence that these have been sort of looked at and that the check mark that they've looked at them. And then when you review them, if you have those adjustments, those changes, Mrs. McGrath would be the one to go to. So that's what I'm thinking about. And it's something I would like to propose the board consider.
Mr. Millar?
Well, it's a good idea. It's not unprecedented. I had the pleasure of participating in a subcommittee a few years ago, which just adds to my disappointment that because of a medical procedure, I'm going to be unable to participate in this subcommittee. However, I wish my colleagues well.
Thank you, Mr. Millar. Mr. Quisenberry.
I appreciate your good wishes, Mr. Millar.
They go to you.
We do have a person here on the board that looks at school board or looks at policies and state law on a regular basis, and I think it would be a perfect nominee, and it is not I, or it is whatever, it is not me, and I'm the English major. Nevertheless, I would like to nominate Mark Buckman if he is willing to take, willing to accept the nomination.
Mr. Buckman, says you.
What do you think?
Going for a second. Wonderful. And so we need a second, and I would like to nominate, if she's willing, Ellen Sheffer, who is an expert in doing paralegal and other such.
I don't know what that has to
do with. Yes, analyses.
I will agree with you.
Thank you. Thank you, both of you. This is and the other
who's
thing.
The alternate? Who's the
and
alternate?
Who would like to be the alternate? Don't put your hand up quite so fast. I'd be happy to be the alternate, and then because I would just like to say that this will be a rotating pairing. So each year, the idea is for all of us on the board to become intimately familiar with our own board policies. And yes, Mrs. Holmes.
Let me think through a little bit about logistics, and this year is probably too soon since you're making this appointment right now, but perhaps in December of 2018, would you want this appointment to come through with your annual reorganization? Is that the time that you would want to select persons to sit on this, and we'll just add it to the batch of
I see a lot of nodding.
Various
Does anyone
assignments
think that's
that you
not
take on.
Okay. I think you're, yes,
so
I think we
more
agree.
Consensus on his idea than taking action on it.
Well, I believe. Is that okay to wait till December for you, Dr. Prater, or were you thinking?
No, you would take this now, but
yes.
These assignments would last a year and a couple
yes.
of months.
No, yes, and that's fine, but we would start now, and then we'll change up again in a year. Yes, so I think we're good. We don't need to
Thank
take
you.
A vote, do
no,
we? We're all,
no.
Is everybody happy?
Thank you.
All right.
I appreciate that. So Ms. McGrath will be in touch with you.
Okay, it's a very good idea. Thank you for suggesting it. And now we're moving on to item number 8.05, which is the board policy revision, recognition of religious beliefs and customs. This is a first reading, and Mrs. McGrath is presenting.
Thank you. This is a first reading tonight of a suggested revision of a board policy. You will note that also the AR, the administrative regulation, was attached, although we typically would not discuss the AR at a board meeting. So this will be extensively reviewed by our cabinet team, and we will look over the AR in detail. So tonight I would like to discuss with you the board policy, and I would like to note a couple things before we look that over. These recommended adjustments did come from an extensive legal team, so I would caution us to make too many adjustments to this, and if so, I might suggest that we consider in taking it back to our legal team if we have any significant adjustments. A second reading is available if needed, and I would like to just look over these two additions that you'll find noted in red. So the first paragraph that says that schools must be places where religion and religious conviction are treated with fairness, respect, and neutrality. I think neutrality is definitely the overarching theme we have to keep in mind with this. The district understands its obligation to be neutral with respect to religion, since schools may not inculcate or inhibit religion. The district upholds the First Amendment when it protects the religious liberties of students of all faiths and students who profess no faith. Schools also demonstrate fairness when they ensure that the curriculum includes study about religion where appropriate as an important part of a complete education. The portion in black already existed, so then you'll see the addition there in red at the bottom where it says, students, however, have no right to proselytize during oral classroom presentations. Instruction which is contrary to a student's religious beliefs and teachings may be optional for that student in accordance with Ed Code or at the discretion of the superintendent or designee. Religious expression in public schools involves a careful balancing of free speech rights and the right to free exercise of religion without promoting or establishing religion. In order to provide
provide guidance to school staff in the balancing of these competing interests, the board directs the administration to develop a regulation. So that's what was noted there as the attachment that provides general guidance regarding religious expression in schools consistent with existing law. So I'd be happy to hear any discussion comments on that, and be happy to take back any suggestions or questions that you have.
Is there anyone from the audience who would like to, from the public rather, that would like to speak to this matter? Yes, please come. Would you please come to the microphone, please?
I guess I'm speaking from an early childhood standpoint. The second edition, the first paragraph or the first sentence there. So yeah. The students, however, have no right to proselytize during oral classroom presentations. Thinking about the small young child who might write a very innocent report about their experience going to Sunday school or church or, you know, some religious event, and could that be skewed? What if a parent was in the room and got upset? I don't know. I'm just foreshadowing something really bad, but just thinking of the young child and wanting to protect them. In that.
Could you clarify that just a little bit, for just I guess as an example? So we were talking a kindergartner?
Or even slightly older, all the way, you know, even fifth or sixth grade, someone who's learning how to write and give an oral presentation. What if you are asked to write on, you know, a recent experience or something you're really proud of? What if they went to, you know, club at church and they earned something, and they've written about this personal experience? Could that be skewed as proselytizing?
I understand your question. Yeah. And I believe that's covered in the ARs. And okay. That's something that, I'm sorry, Mrs. McGrath, perhaps you'd like to speak to that.
Happy to respond. Students in California do have a lot of rights beyond what the staff members have. And so for a student to make a comment in their writing about that, it's not a problem. To stand to a captive audience that must be there and overtly proselytize is different. So a comment about an activity, something like that in a writing is completely fine. And you're right, the administrative regulation gives a lot more detail about what's acceptable or not.
Thank you for bringing that up. Mr. Quisenberry.
Yeah, I just had a comment, and I'm not sure it requires anything more than just listening to my comment. In the second paragraph, and the last sentence, and the board expects that such instruction will identify principles common to all religions and foster respect for multiple creeds and practiced by people. To me, respect is not the word there. To me, the word would be tolerance for multiple creeds practiced by peoples of the world. And that's just kind of maybe being a little bit of a wordsmith in the sense that there may be creeds that I don't really have a whole lot of respect for, but I will tolerate them. And because of our history of religious tolerance in this country. So it's just more I don't think it requires any editing, but it's just a comment.
Is there anyone else who has a comment? Mr. Buckman.
Yeah. I think this is a bold move, we often, Kimberly, if I understand what you said, this came from the attorney's office as opposed to the School Boards Association?
Right. We often have suggestions from Gamut that we get right from CSBA, but this one did come with legal suggestions.
Okay. So I think that's, again, the district going above and beyond, and that's kind of cool because this is kind of a hot topic right now. I still have some questions about it, and so I'm thinking I'm down at the 4th paragraph, and I think it's the last sentence. However, staff, and again, my comments are in the sense of trying to create transparency and creating an ability to have dialogue for both sides. So I just need to ask this question. However, staff shall not prohibit or discourage any student from praying or otherwise expressing his or her his or her religious belief, as long as that does not disrupt the classroom. So my question is, are we saying students shall be allowed to pray in school, in the classroom?
It's pretty well covered in the AR.
Yeah. And I appreciate you bringing that up, because that goes to my next question, Walter. The board policy focuses a lot on the classroom, and the AR focuses a lot on school activities beyond the classroom. So another question I would have for the attorney is, should we be moving, referring to things like just like this one, as disrupt the classroom and school activities, and just use that term in the board policy right up front? I guess those are some of the specific questions I have right now. So I have questions on the AR as well, but we're not discussing the AR.
Correct.
Mrs. Sheffer?
I just want to be clear with the AR part. I know we received it this time, but that's not something we typically receive and that the board is not typically involved in. And I want to, you know, just clarify that that's correct, that our role is not changing, that we're not going to start reviewing ARs or really having input into that, that that's not the role of the board. Is that
correct? The role of the board is your board policy.
Thank you.
Mr. Guzenberry.
Well, I did appreciate the ARs being there, because as a person who is coached in and participated in the schools and dealt with many of these issues in the classroom, it was a bit of getting down into a lot of detail, mm-hmm. but it was, to me, it was good to see this, because I could see how it plays itself out in the various situations that our teachers and staff are placed in. You know, an example would be, you have a football team and a student wants to say a prayer before the game. It does get down in the detail how that should be handled. I don't think in all my years of coaching that anybody ever addressed that with the coaching staff. So I'm just telling you that, you know, it's been handled in different ways. I handled it in a certain way. Someone else where I was an assistant coach handled it in a different way. But it was informative for me. I don't wish to muck about in them and change them or alter them, but I appreciate it.
Great. And just an additional piece of information is, we did have training for our administrators that occurred, that they also are going back to train their staffs as well on specific details, just as you brought up.
So if it's okay, I'm sorry, somebody else line on?
No, you're up.
Go ahead.
Sure. So if it's okay with my fellow board members, I'd really like to see this be able to go to a second reading. I think that the public should have time to review it. We got it on Friday. The public got it on Friday. It's now Tuesday. And I think this is a topic that I know it's the law, but I really think that we ought to allow the public to have some time to sit with it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and I'll support Mr. Buckman's request.
Great. Be happy to bring it back
so
next
we'll
time.
Bring this back for a second reading. Thank you, Mrs. McGrath. Item number 8.06, approve new position pool maintenance technician.
You present to me? Because I thought I was presenting, but hey.
No, it says Kristen Newland and Anthony Palazzo. Look, I have two fantastic presenters with me. Look at this.
Bit, so
look at this. Okay. Pinkerton, would you like to go first?
Proceed.
Okay.
As you know, we are building under Measure D two fantastic new pools. And so this is a new position that has gone to the Personnel Commission for a first reading. It is being advertised currently. And Ms. Sheffer is going to be coming to our next Personnel Commission meeting next Wednesday, and we'll be there for a second reading. So if they have questions, they can talk to Ms. Sheffer about the position. But basically, this is one position that would service the two pools, that would support the plumber, and there would be backup personnel to be trained, cross-trained when that person isn't here. And I asked Anthony if he would give you more details, but it seems like Mr. Pinkerton would also.
After I give details, okay. If that's okay. Just a few. I mean, he's the smart guy that has all the chlorine, all those types of things. So he'll fill you from a standpoint. So again, the board, new position, board has to approve the budget for that position. So that's why we're here today for, you know, to get approval for the position from the board. When we looked at opening the two pools at both Morro Bay High and San Luis Obispo High School, we anticipated hiring somebody to maintain the pools. So that was part of the savings that's going to come from not renting the Cayucas pool and the Cuesta pool and eventually San Luis, you know, Sinchheimer pool as well. So not to mention the transportation costs that are involved in taking students to those pools and gas and overtime for bus drivers and all those types of things. So it fits into that. This particular person, we're asking for the board to approve a full-time position at this point, even though we have one pool coming on board. So part of this, and Anthony's going to discuss a little bit more about kind of how this is all going to mesh together, but currently we have a huge need at Morro Bay High School to deal with seagull abatement. So I'm just... Absolutely true. Absolutely true. Deterrent, right? So...
So they nest when
the birds leave, which is going to happen very soon. You know, we're going to have to get up and clean and go through that process. So so this person is going to help with that aspect of it, as well as we're joking about it, but it's actually something we really have to get under control as a district. So Anthony's been talking with Monterey Bay Aquarium about it, you know, different types of ideas, new construction. So we do envision this person not just doing the pool of Morro Bay right now, but also assisting with other needs with maintenance, and in particular right now at Morro Bay High School. And if you've been out at Morro Bay High School over the last few weeks, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And so it's something we need to work on. So it's another part of that. So, Anthony, you can proceed to...
Could I just ask a quick question? Just a quick question. What eats seagulls?
Well,
because there's your solution.
Well, as he was saying that, I saw the two applications we'd received just got revoked. So,
yes.
Thanks. We've got a kind of a multiple pronged attack, and let me say that again clearly. We will not be abating seagulls. We will be deterring seagulls. No seagulls will be harmed intentionally in the, you know, they're,
all right,
we're not going to abate them. In terms of the seagulls, there's a couple different things. We've been talking to a group out of Moss Landing who I've kind of landed on based on the various folks I've been talking to up in the Monterey area that deal with this, including the aquarium. And so they've got a kind of a multiple pronged attack. There are some falcons now that are trained to be non-destructive. I guess that was one of the things we had tried prior, and it was a little traumatic for students to see air attacks. So they do fly the falcons that deter the seagulls. They do not harm the seagulls. We have to start keeping patrol up on that roof prior to the nesting season. In other words, disrupt the nesting of the seagulls before they get the nest down and they get the eggs in the nests. And so what they said is they will go elsewhere and nest elsewhere if it becomes too complicated or too problematic to nest on our roofs. What's happened is we've inadvertently got a rookery started up there. It's high up. It's got nice protected, those old solar panels. It's got parapet roofs. They're nice and flat. There's not a lot of predators in that area. There's a food source with all the Aaron Primer's wonderful cuisine is a great food source. So it's kind of a combination of everything, and we just need to get on it. So we're going to start that now. We're going to start flying some falcons in the next couple weeks. That will kind of get them
the babies and get everything moved away. And they do kind of move off the site for a period during the winter. And then we'll get on this in February before they start nesting again and hopefully disrupt the rookery, if you will, and get them to go maybe across the street to another facility or somewhere. So that's the seagull piece. Now, hopefully no one's watching this that wants to apply for this position. So Chris, we may have to double the salary. But in terms of the actual position, we've talked to a lot of different districts. Lucia Marr, we've talked to Gilroy, we've talked to a couple different districts that are kind of similar in size, have similar type pools. And so they typically have a person that manages their pools. And most of these are districts we talked to with 1 to 2 to 3 pools. So they've all advised us it is a full-time position. It's usually about 2 to 3 hours per pool for the maintenance daily, checking of chemicals, sweeping, cleaning, maintaining the pool itself, ordering the supplies, keeping the thing tidy, if you will, and just making sure everything's running in good working order. Now, there are times where things are slow and it doesn't need all that time. And so we have cooked in to the job description kind of a backup maintenance and plumber position, because this person will need to have experience working with basic plumbing, electrical, and other types of systems because, well, that's what a pool is it's a pump with a big tank attached to it. So that tank just happens to get swam in. So basically, if there is downtime, there is the opportunity to keep this person full-time busy throughout the district, mostly probably out at the coast in the beginning, and then, be able to move them at the two high schools to kind of help with plumbing needs and other maintenance needs at the two high schools as the need arises. So we're requesting approval of the budget and this position this evening, and then we will be bringing it back to the Personnel Commission next Wednesday for final approval there, so I can answer any questions that you may have on the position or any other bird matters as it may be.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to speak to this matter? Seeing no one, Mrs. Sheffer.
Having been out to Morro Bay High School just a few days ago and witnessing the huge amount of just feathers and other things that birds tend to leave behind. And this was summer without a great food source from the kids of lunches and the aroma that also is part of the problem. I would be happy to support getting this on the road, approving the new position of pool maintenance technician.
Mr. Buckman.
Is that a motion?
No, the second.
Okay. I'll second it, but I do have a few questions. Is that okay?
Sure.
I may have missed it, but what pay level is this comparable to in the district? Is it
this? Go ahead. Another. Yeah. So this is comparable to our plumber one, or it's our electrician one, our HVAC tech one. It's kind of our entry level service tech, if you will.
And that's roughly.
I can't remember the exact pay grade. The
and pace. So roughly how much is.
$73,000.
I'm sorry, I missed it. Like I said, I missed it.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Says it's on the item.
Yeah.
There.
With that's with benefits, et cetera.
Okay. Thanks. And then, I'm sorry, I missed it. I just was looking in the job description for the seagulls and missed it.
The exact hourly cost is on Thanks. The website if you wanted to see that for the positions, those entry-level positions.
Great.
So if you go under personnel salary schedules, this is an SEIU position. So it would be on the SEIU salary schedule.
Okay. The Personnel Commission does such a great job at this. It's, I understand. But the other quick thought I had was, is there such a thing as a certification for a pool maintenance person, a state certification?
Yeah, there's a certified pool operator certification process.
Okay.
It's a one-day seminar and a test. We've actually had earlier this year, or actually late last year, we sent all of our folks to it.
Wow.
That were the HVAC electrical. It's a fairly inexpensive course.
Okay.
And we kind of got ahead of it thinking, you know, it'd be good to have all of those folks just have the knowledge of it. We did send even some of the custodial staff went along as well so they could get it.
Okay.
I believe everybody took and passed the test. So it is fairly straightforward. I have reached out to Cuesta. They've offered to be a huge resource for us to mm-hmm. kind of help train or they even said they'd throw their pool out of balance and let our person kind of rebalance it.
We
do have Sinsheimer right next door. Sean there is a great resource over at the city that can kind of help us as well.
Okay.
He's literally across the parking lot. So
I brought up the certification because in reading the job description, I did not see that it was a required part of the job in the job description. So I may have missed it.
It says certified pool operator certifications are also required.
Okay, great, and I appreciate that. Thanks. And then the last thought I had was has anybody, when they do this, do they hire somebody that's a lifeguard certified as well? Because this person's going to be at the pool all the time, opening and closing it, and would that be of value to us?
We did talk about that.
Okay.
And what we landed on is that it's that person. This person needs to know how to swim. Certainly important. I mean, laugh, but it,
yeah.
But that was not a requirement that we saw at other districts.
Okay.
Because mostly this person probably shouldn't be in the pool area necessarily when students are there. They should be, kind of there before students. They shouldn't be doing what they need to do while students are in the pool, messing with chemicals, et cetera. That should all be done when students are not on deck. And when students are in the pool, the site and/or the program that's operating that person should be focused. Who's running that program should be the one focused and be lifeguarding, and our person should be basically focusing on safety and their own safety, working with the chemicals, et cetera.
Well, I'm glad you guys discussed it. So
we did. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. So I'll second the motion.
There isn't no motion.
Yeah.
Oh, there is.
Mr. Mullen.
I'd like a turn.
Yes.
First of all, the total compensation is $73,000, right?
Yes,
okay.
With all of
I am a lifelong bird watcher and bird aficionado. I want to apologize for my intemperate remark about marksmanship.
All right. Thank you for that mea culpa, Mr. Millar. So we have a motion by Evelyn Sheffer, Mrs. Sheffer, and a second by Mr. Buckman. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes 5-0.
Okay. Thank you so much.
So now we have the action consent agenda. And as I read off these titles, if you would like to pull them, please say so. 9.01, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. 9.02, approve increase to substitute salary schedule. Item 9.03, approve updated job description, Deputy Director of Student Support Services. 9.04, approval of purchase orders and CalCard.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's the next one.
No? Okay. CalCard purchases. 9.05, approval of warrants and payroll. 9.06, approval of furniture and equipment requests. 9.07, disposition of surplus property. 9.08, acceptance of donations. 9.09, approval of quarterly report on uniform complaint filings, Williams settlement. And 9.010, approve revisions to board policy 61646-1, high school graduation requirements, second reading. Okay. Okay, so let's first.
I'll move items 9.01 through 9.04 and 9.06 through 9.10 for approval.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Mr. Millar and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And
I pulled 9.05 because I have to recuse myself. My wife is employed by PMSM Architecture Firm.
Thank you, Mr. Millar.
I'll move approval of the 9.05 approval of warrants and payroll.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
There's a motion by Mr. Quisenberry and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's four with one.
We were lucky to have a quorum.
I know. Yes, with one abstention. So moving down to advanced agenda. Any notions on advanced agenda and reports by board members? Mr. Quisenberry.
Just wanted to make sure that this meeting went on a little bit longer. First of all, I want to commend the Slo County Library for their summer program. And what brought this to mind was the children from Hawthorne this summer going to their Friday programs. It was a great program, and they have a great reading program in the summer. I think it's really excellent that our students are getting there. Friday, the 18th, I had a pretty busy day. I got to take my grandson on his kindergarten tour. Because he's a TK at Del Mar, he really kind of knows the routine there. But it was really fun to go anyway and watch the parents and the kindergartners, the prospective kindergartners, go through the rooms. And I had the chance to talk with Alicia Camelli. And then Hernan Hernandez is a Morro Bay High grad, one of my former students, and he's wonderfully bilingual, which I think is a real plus at that school. And I saw him interacting with a lot of parents, and that warmed the cockles of my heart. Also, I think some other folks will report on this. Later Friday afternoon, I got to go to the SLCTA, kind of a meet and greet, board members and teachers. I just wanted to, you know, as the kids say, shout out a couple of people. Eric Jarvis was there, Matt Moore, I guess, who's the new president of SLCTA. Saw Terry Finnegan, the longtime SLCTA staff secretary. A lot of new faces, a few experienced teachers. I talked a little bit to Myla Vukovic-Labar, but it was really fun. I thought it was really nice to see Ellen and Mark there. They may have to add a comment or two. Finally, well, not finally, but next to finally, the Sunnyside paint job is really nice. Been over there, looked at that, and if it's the same elsewhere, it looks like they did a very good job. Want to mention that once again, it's the 10th annual Grandparents Day coming up at the South Bay Community Center on September 10th, sponsored by Rotary. Monies collected, some of the money, not all the money, goes to right now the Music Boosters, and we hope Baywood and Monarch Grove will participate. So that's Sunday, September 10th from noon to 4. It's free admission, a lot of free activities for the families. Please come, bring
kids.
You have
to be a grandparent.
We love it. You don't have to be. You don't have to be.
You can borrow mine, Walter.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll lend you a grandkid or two.
Can I piggyback on Mr. Quisenberry's report?
Sure.
My grandson wanted me to report to the board how much he enjoyed the new C.L. Smith play structure during a recent visit. We made two trips over to Smith, and he just, we do dueling grandson. Anyway, thank you. That's my report.
We need to all get together.
Mr. Buckman.
Thanks. I was lucky enough to attend the new teacher and classified staff barbecue. It was great to meet the folks, and a lot of excited people coming to the district to work here. They're really, really set and ready to go. Ryan Cook's hamburger's okay. He does a great job as the chef. I also was invited to the SLCTA meet and greet. I can't add much to what Jim said. I do want to give a shout out to some students. It was great to see two students from San Luis High School at the event at Mitchell Park this summer. They were there, and they were talking about that they're trained to register voters. And I tried to get help pronouncing these names, so I apologize to these students, but it's Jen Basich Peace and Minori Jagia. And I apologize if I've just totally destroyed those. Saturday I was honored to be a member as a panel discussion discussing the LCAP at a national NAACP state meeting of education community leaders. And I really want to thank the administration for helping me prepare for that. The event went really well, and good things are going to happen. And last, I'd like to thank Ida Marie Alderites over in Buildings and Grounds. She helped me reserve a room for a nonprofit group so they can do their strategic planning. And I'm bringing this up also to let other organizations know that the facilities at San Luis Coastal, like this room in particular and others, are available for nonprofits and for profit businesses to hold their events. So that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mark. Oh, Mrs. Schiffer.
since our Measure D meeting not held last week, Mr. Pinkerton took me on a tour of our campuses to see Measure D progress, and the paintings of the elementary school, the exteriors are really, it's just amazing how fresh and new Sinsheimer and Sunnyside and Del Mar and the sites look. It was fun to go into the old gym at San Luis High, and he was right. They wouldn't have let me in if I hadn't had my hard hat. So that was fun to see, as well as the new robotics lab room. So thank you for the opportunity for that. I already commented on the seagulls, a very noticeable part of the visit to Morro Bay. I attended the workshop on First Amendment here that was held a couple of weeks ago, and it was really interesting and informative, and I learned a lot, and was also, it affirmed that we did things correctly during handling the expressions uproar at the end of last year, that we did things just the way we should have, and that was not surprising, but good to have affirmed. I, as Mr. Quisenberry and Mr. Buckman pointed out, I did attend the SLCTA event on Friday, and yes, thank you to Mr. Moore and to Mr. Jarvis for putting that together. And then I just wanted to comment that on Monday, I had an interesting observance besides just the eclipse. I drove with my husband and my son out to Parkfield because we were determined to get someplace where there was sun. And we pulled over to the side of the road, and so did several other people who saw us with our goofy sunglasses and thought that that was the place to be. So it ended up, and they were people from San Luis and Morro Bay and Templeton who were also trying to just get out to clear skies. And as I observed not just the eclipse, but my fellow viewers, I found that it was a reflection of science in our country, because there were 8 men and 2 women who were out viewing the eclipse. And I just thought that was a secondary interesting observation, that a lot of men drove out there and just a couple of women. So I think that is not just in my generation, but sadly, we're not catching up. It's a different sort of achievement gap we have. So that's it for me. Thank you.
I just want to note for the rest of the teachers in the CTA that the rest of us aren't shunning them, but we can only meet with them 3 at a time, because otherwise it'd be a
Well, actually, I don't particularly care for the event. I think it undermines the authority of the district.
I can
district.
Only speak for myself. So we also have an informational item of a 45-day budget revision. Do I need to elaborate on that? Okay, just for information. And so that would take us to adjournment, and we will be meeting again on September 5th for a regular meeting, and again on the 14th for Measure D and B3. Thank you very much. Good night.
Excellent meeting. Well done.
We survived. Oh.